Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone to the American Overlander podcast. I'm your host, Will Fowler from Venture to Rome. Now, Venture to Rome is a video YouTube channel where we go on epic adventures, we do installs and rig modifications and gear reviews and recommendations. So if you haven't already, head over to the channel, give it a watch, and if you like it, give it a sub. On this podcast, we go deeper into some of the subjects that we've covered on our videos. We go behind the scenes in some of those videos, and we interview movers and shakers in the overlanding world. So let's get into it. In this episode, we are talking with Matt and Kara McClellan from Ozark Overlanding Adventures, and they are some of the most engaging, authentic, real down-to-earth people who happen to have a popular YouTube channel and who happen to be very knowledgeable in the overlanding space. And so we have been collaborators and friends for a little while. And so it was really fun to get together and have a, you know, relatively candid conversation about what it's like to be a YouTuber, different areas that, you know, they've overlanded, that they dream about overlanding, the events that they're going to go to, and just kind of having this really great organic conversation. So this was a long conversation because, as friends sometimes do, we ran long. So we're going to break it up into two parts. And in this first part, we talk about how they started. We talk about where they love to overland, how they met as a couple. We talked about how their YouTube channel grows and has become what it is today. And we get in the weeds a little bit on what it's like to have a Patreon account, what it's like to have people who are paying to support you and the responsibility that comes with that. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. It was a lot of fun to record, and stay tuned afterwards for part number two. So I'm here today with one of my favorite overlanding YouTube channels, which is Ozark Overlanding Adventures, Matt and Kara. And I, so before I get into asking you questions, we get in this conversation, I just want to say one of my favorite things on YouTube is just when you two press record on the camera and chat. The conversations you guys have, it just seems so authentic and so great. And so I am looking forward to our chat. So thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, we're excited. We're very excited.
It's always a super quirky time whenever we get together because we're just real.
Yeah. Well, I think that carries through. It's like people can sniff out authenticity and the opposite of that. And there's no opposite of that with you guys. It's just like, you're just so natural on camera, and like stuff sometimes makes you cringe a little bit, which is because it's great, because it's real. It's like, yeah, they're gonna have an argument about this right now.
Matt makes me cringe pretty much daily. So,
so how did you guys meet?
Well, we met because we both own Jeeps. I mean, it was really that simple. I was part of a Jeep club, and she came into the Jeep club, and we went on a couple rides.
He was at one point a Jeeple.
I was not, no. Okay.
What is it? What's a Jeeple?
A Jeeple.
Basically like the stereotypical, going to have ducks on the dash, going to have an angry grill.
Get mad if you don't wave at you.
Everything that Matt is against right now.
Yeah.
I might suffer from a little bit of that.
You know, if you own a Jeep, we're automatically best friends. And, you know, that mentality. I'm like, no.
I have to say, I get a little offended when someone does not wave back still. It's like, come on. I know you saw me. I know you saw me coming. My hand is way out there and waving at you. So what's your excuse?
Whenever I had a Jeep Wrangler, I would never wave at the non-Wranglers. But now if I see like a Trailhawk strip going down a Grand Cherokee, I'll wave at it.
Oh, do they wave back?
Because they're more
I know they're capable.
Do they get it, or are they just like, I'm waving back because I don't know.
Okay. I told Matt I wanted to get the sticker on my rearview mirror, and he was like, no, you're not doing that.
No, you're not. Yeah, she wants the hand on the side view mirror. No.
Anyways,
If I see you, I'll wave, but otherwise I'm not looking for you.
You're a Jeep couple.
We're a Jeep couple. It's kind of a Jeeple.
You're Jeep hearts.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, we met purely because of Jeeps. You know, she was this woman wheeling a Jeep and doing what I loved, and we met and, you know, kind of started out as a friendship and grew into more than that.
How long ago was this? How long have you been together?
That was beginning of 2015.
I think so.
Early. Yeah. Beginning of 2015. Mm-hmm. So 7 years now we've known each other.
Wow. So when you met, so two Jeeps in the night met.
Basically, we actually first met on a night run.
We first met on a night run.
It was blinding me the entire time because he has these big old light bars. He actually came and knocked on my door or rolled in my window and he was like, are the lights okay? Are they blind? I'm like, they're fine.
Yeah, she lied to me. Yeah, I had bumper lights. I had LEDs on my bumpers and I made sure, are my lights bothering you? Because I didn't want them to be shining in the eyes. And apparently she lied to me.
That's because he was like the head honcho of the group. So I didn't want to I don't know.
I was tailgating on that trip.
She lied to you the first time you met her, and it hasn't stopped since.
I'm just kidding. So true.
So like, how did you? So you guys were jeeping, but was that overlanding, or did like overlanding develop from like doing jeeping?
Yeah, we were just on a night ride just to a waterfall in the area, and so it was just an event that they did, like a night run, and with that club that he was a part of. But he has always loved overlanding and exploring. I had never actually experienced any of that in a Jeep because that was at the time my first Jeep, and it was just a two-door JK. And so I had never wheeled it before, but I loved to go through the mud and all that back then. It's changed now, but I did like to go out and do hiking and that kind of thing. And he was always into everything outdoors. So that just,
I bought a Jeep because I love hiking and my sensible four-door car couldn't get me to some of the places I wanted to go hiking.
Yeah.
So when it was time to replace that, when the four-door Jeeps came out, oh, that's a, off-road family car. Let's do it.
Yeah.
With three kids. So got a four-door Wrangler, in 2012. Mm-hmm. And just to get to more places to hike. And I just fell in love with exploring the Ozarks and seeing all these cool places that nobody gets to see because they don't get off the pavement.
So the Ozarks, let's talk about the Ozarks for a second, because the Ozarks, I lived a little known fact. I lived in Kansas City, Missouri for 3 years mm-hmm. when I was in grad school, my first stint of grad school. But I never went to the Ozarks. It was too far away. I was too busy in school. Yeah. But I heard about the Ozarks and a lot. And then of course I've seen the Netflix show, which is, very accurate about the Ozarks.
You get a lot of hits on YouTube because of that. Anytime the new season is coming out, people search for Ozarks. And so a lot of times they get directed to our show. So thanks for watching the Ozarks.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Jason Bateman. It just seems, here's what I think about it. It's this massive forested kind of wetlandy lakey area that has like a bunch of secrets in it. That's how I think of it. It's like you can get lost in there.
You're not wrong. I mean, not so much lakey, but streams everywhere, but not so many lakes.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
The Ozarks are a special place. Now, when we say Ozarks, we're talking Ozark National Forest.
Okay.
In Arkansas. Now, Ozarks, like the TV show Ozarks, that TV show is set in Missouri mm-hmm. in the Missouri Ozarks. And so that's just the general broad, the Ozark Mountain Range or the Ozark Plateau. When we say Ozarks, we're talking specifically the Ozark National Forest in Arkansas. Okay.
Got it.
So public land. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's good. Cause I didn't know. So for me, like the word Ozarks is kind of amorphous. It just means like this part of the map. But you're saying that there is Ozark National Forest, which is primarily in Arkansas.
It's all in Arkansas.
The whole thing. Okay, great. So how's that? So you've been to the Ozarks, you've been west to Colorado and Utah mm-hmm. and all those places. What makes the Ozarks different and special versus those places?
The waterfalls to me. I mean, there's waterfalls anywhere out west too, but the water, like, I don't know if you've ever seen any of our videos, the clear blue streams, the green forest, it's very thick and the trails are very much, some of the trails are not as popular to other people. Like, you have to do the work to get to the trails and get to some of the places that we see in the Ozarks. Whereas out west, there's a lot of the trails that are definitely sectioned out and, you know, Jeep badges, and like, they're more commonly driven.
Yeah.
A lot of them are county roads, yeah. You know, mountain passes,
yep,
type thing. The Ozarks are very rugged, very remote, very, like, very densely forest, very tight trails, tons of streams going through the, you know, the nooks and crannies of the, of the mountains. Our biggest obstacle is water crossings.
Yeah.
You can't go just about anywhere in the Ozarks without encountering a water crossing.
Yeah. The last video that he made on YouTube had 44 water crossings.
Yeah. That's like an hour and a half video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the big one. Yeah.
The high watermark of the movie is what I called it.
So number one, it's an incredible video. So if you're listening to this and you haven't watched that, you should definitely go watch it. It's High Watermark Trail, the movie. And it's an hour and a half, and it's unbelievable. Like, the terrain that you cover, the water that all, like, all those water crossings. And like, I can't remember exactly like what time of year you go, if you're aiming for high water or low water, cause spring. There's so much water.
Spring is our high water season.
Okay. So you want more water. That's what you're going for, is like, how much, how deep can we get?
Yeah, if you want deep water, that's when
you gauge it. if you want to do that, and if you want to possibly injure yourself, you go when it's really high. But
you can also test yourself and test your rig.
Yeah. I see. I think I have enough faulty wiring under my rig from my own wire jobs that I would be very hesitant to go too deep.
Sounds like Matt in his early days.
Early days, horrible
at wiring.
Yeah, it all worked.
It
didn't look pretty, but it worked.
we have this guy in our group, his name's Tim. He drives a Land Rover Disco LR3, and he has done some wiring stuff, and those are just notoriously bad electronics, because they have like a sunroof drain that drains into the electronics panel or something. And so like his rig will literally start throwing codes and then weird stuff. And he's like, you guys, if I turn off my rig right now, I'm not gonna be able to turn it back on again for the rest of the trip. And then he'll just kick his mud, you know, his rugs underneath the seat a little bit. He'll just be like stomping it. Pop, pop, pop. Okay. So everything's fine now. Like, he just kind of stomps on the wires a little bit and keeps going. So we're just waiting for that thing to die its final death.
Yeah.
Awesome. But back to the Ozarks and the high water trail, 44 water crossings. Did you like, is it deep enough that like you're getting water inside your rig?
Depends on how good your door seals are.
And it depends on what type of vehicle you're driving.
And the type of vehicle. I mean, our very first water crossing, it's always the deepest one of that route, crossing the Buffalo River. I mean, it was high enough that day that I could feel it pushing my Gladiator around.
Oh, wow.
And as I'm crossing the stream, it's pushing me downstream. Mm-hmm. And if you watch one of our guys, John and his Wrangler, as he's coming across, he gets a little too far downstream and a little bit deeper section. And you can actually see him in the video, his back end swinging out.
Oh, wow.
But this is where I like to point out that there's another part of the trail that you can cross.
Yeah, there's an alternate crossing there. There's an alternate crossing if you're not up for it.
Or maybe if you don't have big enough tires or something.
Not up for snorkeling. You don't have a snorkel. Do not do that.
Yeah, there's an alternate crossing there.
Okay.
But, you know, that's, yeah. And then there was another one that was, it's a very short crossing. Maybe, I mean, as far as my Gladiator goes, maybe a vehicle and a half from one side to the other.
Mm-hmm.
But in that little hole, it gets deep. I mean, you nosedive into it, you come steeply out of it. And, you know, it's those types of things that will get you.
Yeah.
Because you don't really realize how steep it is going in. You may accidentally, you know, drop your nose in where the air intake is on a Wrangler. Right. It's right there in the front. So, you know, you drop your nose in there, not realizing how deep it is, then, you know, you'll get water sucked in your engine and game
over. That's it. Well, yep.
Robert was in his 4Runner whenever he went through it, and he opened his doors in the back and water just like was flowing out.
Yeah. He got lots of water in his rig, but yeah. I didn't get any in the Gladiator. The door seals worked really great in it.
Let me just say,
in my old JK,
I didn't get any in mine either because it was in the garage.
The best way to keep water out of your rig.
Now, in my old JK, I'd get water in it all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know,
that's how we called it, to the trash panda.
I knew where the drain plugs were. I get home, pull the drain plugs, set a fan in there, dry it out. It's good to go.
I will say, you will never see my Jeep. Well, you will most likely not see my Jeep in the Ozarks.
Do you still want to get it wet?
Well, I don't want to go that deep. I don't, because to me, I think, okay, well then there's sediment in the rivers and the streams and all that. And then I think about the mud that you're going through. That's got little pieces of gravel that's getting in your engine and underneath and corroding things. And I also think it's really dense. So you're going to get a lot of pinstripes. And
it's the pinstripe hilly for her.
She
didn't want the pinstripes on her.
You've got a beautiful Jeep. So yeah, I get that. It took me a couple of years before I just accepted that I'm just going to have lots of scratches on my Jeep and that's okay. And now I'm just like, whatever, let's go. I don't need limb risers.
Of the Beauty and the Beast.
So you guys have been everywhere. You guys have been to Colorado, to Utah. You guys have been all over the Midwest.
We haven't been everywhere, but it's on our list.
But you've got videos. Yeah. You've got videos. Like the ground you cover is impressive, especially if you look at like your channel versus other channels that are maybe similar size or even bigger than yours. A lot of them, including mine, are really kind of regional focused because that's what we have the bandwidth to do. But you guys get way, way out of Arkansas and you do it.
We love to travel.
Yeah.
We love to travel. We made our first trip to Colorado. Gosh, that was four and a half years ago now.
Yeah.
2017. Yeah. 2017 was our first trip to Colorado. We took my Jeep. We did the, you know, very first time. We stayed at Airbnbs.
Yeah.
And we did.
Didn't even camp.
Like 4 days in the Uray area.
Airbnb, so we kind of overlanded the Airbnb way.
Is that a thing?
We camped on our way in twice. Because we camped in New Mexico and then we camped outside of Silverton. And then stayed in an Airbnb outside of Ouray, Colorado. We stayed, I don't know, 3-4 days there. And then from there went over to Moab for 3 days, our first time there, and stayed in a little Airbnb there.
Just took our Jeep and drove trails.
Yeah, we just took my Jeep.
Yeah.
I still remember that first time driving up into Colorado and just being overwhelmed.
I know we both,
how gorgeous it was.
We both cried.
Yeah, like several times. So gorgeous. There were waterfalls pouring off of every mountain because of the snow melt.
A lot of snow that year.
And it was just unreal. We would go, just around every turn, it'd be like, wow.
And we're Christians. And so we would look at everything that God's created and it's just mind blowing. Like it's just to think that we matter and he has made this beauty.
Yeah.
It's just overwhelming.
I think that transcends even kind of, religion, that feeling that this place, these places that we go to, one of the things that keeps us going is there is a different kind of connection that happens when you're out there. And I think for some people, it's really spiritual. And for people who don't maybe identify that way, it's still a spiritual experience. It's still what drives people to want to be out there because you change a little bit. Something changes about you when you see the majesticness of like the Colorado mountains or whatever that is. You're just like, whoa, this is hitting me on a deeper level than just, sitting at home watching Netflix, watching Jason Bateman in the Ozark.
That way, yeah.
It's way different. It's my own story. It's my own connection.
Once for me, like when I get out there, it's camping. Like there's just something about having a meal around the campfire, or just getting able to just decompress and disconnect from everything. There's not a scale out there. There's not social media. There's nothing out there to judge me or any of my thoughts, or it's just me and nature doesn't judge. Like it's just beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, like there's that thing with animals, like animals don't really live in the past or in the future. They're just kind of always in the present. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of that that happens when you're out there in nature. Yeah. It's like this, you know, this campsite, these trees, these mountains, they don't care about what happened yesterday. They don't really care what's going to happen tomorrow. They're just here and I'm here with them in this moment. Yeah. That's wonderful.
And I think you also take a little bit of that back home with you. I know I'll be sitting at the house, you know, on the couch, and like, we'll be talking about our trip. We're fixing a plan coming up for Colorado. And just in the back of my head, I think of this tree that's sitting beside a stream there over off of Imogene Pass. And I just think that tree's there just sitting by a stream. And I don't know, I just feel connected to that place.
Yeah.
It's cool. So
do you have a place that you feel the most connected to, or that you want to go to the most? Like, is there a place that you've either been that you just have to go back to, or that you haven't been to yet that you just have to go see that's out there?
It's for me. I mean, we definitely, Uray will always be a special place for us. Right. We've been there the most. That was the first place we went. So that will always be a special place.
Just that area around Colorado.
Too. I just really have this longing inside to go places I've never been and see something new every time. Our second trip to Colorado, we'd gotten a little teardrop trailer. And so we took it. That was our first big, long term overlanding trip. And we started it. We started in Denver and made our way to Uray.
I did a half marathon at the beginning of our trip in
what?
Castle
excuse,
Rock.
Excuse me, what? You did a half marathon? Like you like, hey, let's go on a trip overlanding. But before we start, I'm gonna just go do this.
She
used to be a fanatic runner.
And so yeah, in 2018, I was an iron runner for Arkansas. I did like, I don't know how many races is it? 20, I'm looking at all my trophies. 23 back. So I did one marathon one weekend and I did a marathon the next weekend. So 26
marathon,
miles.
Half marathon. Was it marathon, half marathon, marathon?
Yeah. So one weekend I did a full marathon. The next weekend I did a half marathon. The weekend after that, I did another full marathon. So when I went to Colorado, I just thought it'd be way cool. I was like,
I want to find a half marathon in Colorado. She found this one in Castle Rock, just south of, is it Castle Rock?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just south of Denver. And she happened to have a friend that lives there.
Yeah.
And she's like, babe, can we start our trip there? And I want to run this marathon. Like,
at 6,000 feet.
Okay. Yeah. And so that's
so
how
we not trained for that.
That's how we started. That's how we started that trip. And then we lived off grid for the,
and I was acclimated ever since after that. I was like, I'm good.
Yeah.
That's impressive. That's super impressive. I do not generally mix any type of exercise with overlanding or.
See, I mix hiking in. So I love
do you. Okay.
Go hiking.
I guess I do a little bit, but I don't. We hike a little bit, but
hiking at elevation is not the same though. Cause like we have started out with these grandiose ideas of what we could do there. And then we'll get to like a tree about 5 feet away from us. And we're like dead.
Kate and I did this hike in Copper Basin, Idaho, which if you guys ever make it out to Idaho, we'll have to go to Copper Basin. Cause it's just so pretty. We did this hike. It was 3 miles in, 3 miles out. So 6 miles total, which for people who hike, they're like, yawn, that's no big deal. It was 2000 feet up and 2000 feet down. And we just about died. I was like, is there flat ground anywhere? This is killing me. Like I was done. I was done. I was like, give me the margarita. I'm just going to sit in this under this tree and get drunk for the rest of the night because I'm cashing in my chips.
Well, after I finished the half marathon that year, we went, I think it was back in when we went back to Silverton area. Yeah, it was the Silverton area. we saw them putting up signs everywhere, and we were like, what is this? And so we finally stopped and asked somebody, and it was the route for a 100-miler that they do in the Colorado area. It goes, I think, from Durango to Silverton. But the elevation changes like 50,000. And I was just like, babe, maybe next year. I never did that.
Yeah, that was a no.
Well, I have a ton of respect for what you did do, which is a half marathon before a trip is crazy. And like, no, I don't mean crazy like you're insane. I mean like crazy, crazy respect.
It's all that.
So, yeah. So Matt, you mentioned this, a few minutes ago. You were like, I feel compelled to see new places. So I think a lot of people out there can identify with that. I think that's what drives a lot of us, is that, and that's what actually brings us together as a community. I think some of us share that drive. And so I'm curious if you two have a place that, like, I always, for me, it's like that place has captured my imagination. And I just can't stop thinking about it. I'm imagining, I'm dreaming about it. Is there a place like that that you haven't been to yet?
I can for sure say right now, Glacier. I want to go to Glacier so bad.
I think mine's Arizona.
Is it?
Yeah. I want to go to Arizona. But I mean, honestly, I just get overwhelmed thinking about all the possibilities. I mean, right now my focus is on our next big trip this summer, which is back to Colorado. But it's northern Colorado. We have never ventured north of I-70. Mm-hmm. And so with the exception of one trail that we want to run down in Vail, which is a, you know, the only Jeep Badge of Honor trail we don't have in Colorado.
Holy Cross.
That's a ripper though.
Yeah. It's a tough trip.
Are you taking Sully?
Once you've done Pritchett, you're like,
yeah, that's true.
If anything.
We're going to run Holy Cross, but then the rest of the time we're going to spend the whole time north of I-70, and I've never been there. I have no idea what to expect.
Yeah.
I just got ordered the Fun Treks book for Northern Colorado, and just, it came in yesterday. And so, you know, I've opened it up and just kind of looking to see, but it's going to be all new.
But where would you say that you would want to go besides like where you're planning?
Arizona, Nevada, Arizona. Utah. Idaho,
Montana, Wyoming.
Montana.
Hey, I heard Idaho in there.
Washington.
Made the list.
Yeah, I literally.
But then I also throw out places like New York, and he's like, "Why don't we want to go to New York?"
Like New York City, or like New York to like Overland.
Yeah, New York City. I'm thinking, there's a great national forest up in upper New York.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, let's go there.
Placid's up there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm all down with that.
I mean, honestly, there's places everywhere. Like that's the thing. You can just sit here and you can think about all the places. I mean, Glacier is there's definitely top of the list for me. Mm-hmm. But if you sit there and think about it, I want to see the wave. Like he mentioned Arizona. I want to see the wave. I want to go and do, what is the Antelope Canyon? I want to do pretty much anywhere in the States. I could think of something I'd want to see there.
Yeah. Is most of it like west?
I've been through Illinois. I can't think of anything I want to go back there and see.
I can't. So like nothing against people from Nebraska, but Nebraska is not a place I think of. It's like, you know, I want to go explore the plains.
I would want to go take a picture of a cornfield just so I could feel like Kevin Costner in Field of Dreams. That's what I would want to do.
You know, Kate and I used to live in New York City. We lived there for 6 years.
Really?
And and there is a bit of, it's like flipped on its head. There's that same, if you took that drive to not want to be around people and that, you know, to go experience new things, you still experience a ton of new things. It's the polar opposite of that. And it's equally exciting.
Yeah. I mean, there's some people that just
scary.
Love that city, urban, metropolitan lifestyle, being in there, all the noise, all the people, all the hustle and bustle and stuff. And I'm just so the opposite of that.
I just want to
get away from all of them.
I just want to experience all of the culture, because I am a firm believer, and Matt is maybe not so much as I am, is that we are all in this big interwoven you know, Earth, and that we can all learn from each other. And so I like to go anywhere we go. That's, I'm a foodie too. Obviously I like to eat. So we like to try the local foods anywhere we go. And I just like to become a part of it. If I don't leave a place feeling like it's home, I feel like I haven't learned enough about that place. And so like, even if it's New York, even if it's Maine, even if it's Pennsylvania, you know, there's always something there that I think I can either take a part of. I just want to take a part of everywhere I go with me.
Yeah. Well, in all those places. And so I think this applies to overlanding too. In all those places, people do the same thing. They go to work, they get groceries, they make dinner, you know, so like you find those pedestrian patterns that actually declutter and defear an area. Cause it's like all these people in New York, they're just going to work. That's what they're doing. Or they're just going to get groceries.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've seen so many acts of kindness in that city. So, and the same thing with overlanders, it's like, there's only a few things that we do. This is why like people complain about overlanding videos sometimes. Yeah. Like all you do is drive and set up camp and cook food. It's like, yeah, that's it. That's it. You're right. That's
in amazing places.
Right. Yeah. So that's really interesting to hear. And I have yet to kind of put my finger on that for myself. Like, what is that? And is that ever going to stop, that drive to want to see new places? Me too. It's my great fear that like, I'll be like, you know, like, I don't know if you've ever gone to Europe or one of you just like, you go to museums and churches. And by the end of the trip, you're like, oh, it's just another old church. I've seen, you know, 50 of these on this trip. It's like when you go wine tasting or something or beer tasting, it's like, it tastes like at the end of the day, it's like, it tastes like beer. I don't know. I don't have anything.
I think if you have that mindset after something that you've experienced, I think that there's something that you need to find within yourself. What has changed within yourself? Because I think we all have that innate desire, and maybe we don't, and that's okay if we don't, but I feel like we do. I feel like we all have that curiosity and that wanting to know more about things. And just, I think it's just your heart and your soul trying to find its way.
The last thing I want to talk about in terms of like your travels is, where are you going to be this year in terms of the myriad of events and expos that are happening all around the country? So do you guys have plans to go to some of the big ones, some of the smaller ones, some of the regional ones? What do you got going?
I may get the opportunity to go out to Expo West. Not nailed down in stone yet.
Well, there's your Arizona.
Yeah, I might get to go out there with Guy GPS.
Oh.
They mentioned that as a possibility. So yeah. I'm not sure yet.
Great. Like to teach?
To teach classes out there.
That's great. We're gonna talk about your channel and all that stuff in just a second, but like safe to say, like you are widely considered an expert in Gaia GPS. You've taught classes on it a lot. You've got a whole video series on it.
I'm like, turn left at Walmart.
Hey, whatever it takes to get there. Like I actually have a script that I wrote for like Gaia GPS. Like, okay, here's like a beginner's guide to Gaia GPS. I'm writing right. And then like, I watched your video and I was like, well, I'd just be repeating everything he already said.
So what's something that's really funny about that? Matt was talking to some guy in the forums about a battery today, and how to connect the battery and how
power stations versus dual batteries.
Oh yeah.
And he was like, you know, for $300 I can build one. And I said, you can, but the components aren't going to be, he was saying he could build a, you know, like the equivalent of a Jackery 1000. He could build.
Anyways, to summarize, he
$300. Yeah.
He pulled up a video and he like dropped the link of Matt's video, like as a reference to back.
Yes.
And Matt was like, why are you showing my video? And he was like, whoa, that's you.
That's my video, bro. That's awesome.
He said, I'm just going to shut up now.
That's awesome. That's so great.
We're going to be at more. He's going to be possibly at Overland Expo just to stay on track here.
Mm-hmm. And you guys already did CORE, right? You did CORE already.
CORE was last September. So we'll be at CORE this year.
Okay.
That's in the fall.
Yeah, that's in the fall.
Got it.
And then
Big Iron.
We'll be at the Big Iron Overland Rally in Kansas.
Oh, Kansas does have overlanding.
It does. Yeah. I mean, the same guy who puts on the More Expo, Chris Holloway, he last year started the Big Iron Overland Rally. It's at the Big Brutus Museum thing outside of Pittsburgh, Kansas, I think. It's not, it's like maybe 45 minutes away from Joplin, Missouri, just over the Kansas.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. In that area, that southeast corner of Kansas.
But it's more like a music festival.
But it's kind of camp chill music thing. Festival meets overlanding rally kind of thing. Yeah. But it's jazz. A bunch of different bands. There are some vendors, but it's mostly just a bunch of people camping in a field, you know, overland style and hanging out. It's the most chill, relaxing event.
I would think ever. It'd be like Woodstock minus the drugs.
Woodstock with overlanding.
So help me understand this. Not, I think I understand that reference, but you understand, like, this is one thing that I haven't got my head around, and I'm going to do it this year. So, you know, I'm going to just do it and see for myself. But when I go overlanding, when I go camping, I want to get the heck away from people. Like 5 miles is way too close for me. Mm-hmm. And so these overlanding events, it seems like everyone's just like packed into a field in sardines, and you're just like hearing snores and smelling farts the whole time because you're so close to everybody.
Overland like. Events is not where you figure out what overlanding is.
So like, I'm curious about that. Like, but you're talking about these events, like they're still really, really great.
Yeah. But
more is not like that. More this year at more is, it's more like an expo, right? So it's like an in-house and kind of outhouse now because they grew outside of the whole vendor area.
I'm telling Chris, you've all just been an outhouse.
Out of house. I don't
outside.
Know. The outside and versus the inside. Anyways, there is a little spot for camping, but it's kind of like we call it urban overlanding.
Yeah.
Because it's, but yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, like the Big Iron, it's, you're around a whole bunch of people. Yes. But they're all people who feel the same way you do.
Yeah.
So it's a whole bunch of like-minded people, you know, whereas when I run into the grocery store here, I'm surrounded by a bunch of not like-minded people and they get on my nerves.
So how can that be though? Because when I go on Facebook, in these Facebook groups, seemingly there are a lot of like-minded people there and they just love to tear each other apart. So do they like self-select into these events where there's not as much of that happening, or is that there as well?
Well, I mean, you know, social media brings out, you know, the worst in people. I agree. And, you know,
it's a screen. When you're, hidden,
you know, where you're hiding behind your keyboard, you feel like you can just say whatever. And yeah, there's no ramifications to it.
And he's kind of guilty of that sometimes.
Oh, yes, very much so. But I'm also guilty of saying it in front of people too. But you know, I'm sure at the overlanding events and stuff, it's all just kept inside. I mean, you're walking, you know, by someone's rig and going, "That's the dumbest thing I've ever seen." But you're not saying out loud to the owner, "Dude, that's the dumbest thing I've ever seen." You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But
it's good to know that you walk by people's vehicles thinking that's the dumbest thing you've ever seen.
Like, I mean, I've never thought of that. But I mean, part of the fun is
you have.
part of the fun is the judgment, though. Part of the fun is like,
there's no right way to do this.
Yeah, exactly.
So
it's comparison to what you know and what like that. I say judgment, but that's, I mean, just like comparison. Every time you compare, you learn a little bit.
Yeah, I love it. I love seeing all the different varieties and stuff. But and there's always people who think it's, you know, my way is the right way.
Yeah.
But there's always those people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. So
my way's not the right way. My way's a way.
Any other events you're going to this year?
So yeah, Big Iron and then Core up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Rendezvous in the Ozarks.
I don't remember the dates of that. Rendezvous in the Ozarks. Mm. It's always the third weekend in October, which is the big Ozarks
bonfire
event. It's not really it's a thing. Yeah, there's bonfire. There's the Rendezvous bonfire, which is just a one night gathering. It's literally just a bonfire, but it's used to spend the weekend traveling to the Ozarks.
So let's talk about your channel. It says that you started your channel in 2010, but I know that's probably not when you started making a lot of overlanding content. Like if you could do the, like if you, the about page, it's like since 2010. And I saw that and I was like, well,
yeah, that's why that's why I started my page. We came up with the name Ozark Overland Adventures in 2015.
Okay.
Like, I think that's when I changed the name of my YouTube page from my name to Ozark Overland Adventures.
Right.
And that's when I came up with that name. But it became, you know, just a place to share videos. Yeah, at that point I had like 500 subscribers.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Hello.
Yeah. You know, 2 years ago. And
you had 500 subscribers 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think it was in June of 2020 that I hit that magic 1,000 subscriber mark.
Yep.
Where I could be monetized.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and then it was like, wow, okay. I made $35 this month. That's a half a tank of gas.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we said. I'm like, that'll pay for you a trip to go to the Ozarks.
Yeah.
Babe.
And so that's when I started thinking, okay, we've reached that milestone. And so let's see what can happen. And started getting serious about making the videos. And by the end of 2020, we had 5,000 subscribers.
Wow. And so you went from 1,000 to 5,000 in 1 year.
In 6 months.
Okay. Oh, right. From July. Yeah. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
In about 6 months. And then 2021, I mean, I'm working from home and I've got quite a bit of vacation time. So I've got time to, you know, make day trips and, mm-hmm. At that point, she had bought a Jackery 500 for our own purposes.
His fame is because of me.
Yeah.
That's what we're saying.
And a friend of mine had a Goal Zero 500.
I paid for that Jackery with my own money.
She did. and a friend of ours had just gotten a Goal Zero 500. And I just had this idea, like, you know, everybody's buying them to run a fridge.
Let's do a comparison.
I'm going to make a video and I'm going to test which one will run a fridge the longest.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was my first real review video. Mm-hmm. And
the next week, Jackery went on sale. Well, Jackery had a sale.
That's right. Yeah. Jackery had a sale.
And we didn't have a clue. We didn't know that. And it was just luck that people, because, you know, whenever you're making these Ozark overlanding videos, like you always think of words that people will like want to click and watch the video.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of products get a lot more views because they can search for that name of that product, that brand. And so that's what they were doing with Jackery. And so.
Yeah. And that video just took off.
Crazy.
Okay. Went crazy.
And then we had people contacting us, wanting us to do more.
That's when companies started approaching me about using their stuff and testing their stuff. And I was like, whoa. So that's how I got into that side of the whole.
And the next thing you know, we have seven fridges in the house running and like five batteries all around the house. I've
seen you do a lot of battery reviews.
Yes. And so,
FedEx guy knows us by name at this point.
Yeah. I bet he does. Yeah.
And, you know, so that opened up that side of this YouTube thing, social media influencer, which sounds really weird to say.
Yeah.
That became another avenue for revenue to grow to do what we want to do.
Yeah.
You know, through that affiliate marketing stuff.
And that opened up a whole new world. Like we never would have thought at the beginning. We think YouTube making the videos, there's income, but then you didn't think of, oh, these affiliate programs that you can help and, you know, get income that way.
You know, you earn 3-5%
income
someone
buys. Yeah. For people who are listening that don't know, so like a common revenue stream for people who have YouTube channels is to be enrolled in an affiliate marketing program. There's lots of big ones. The most common is probably Amazon's affiliate program. And a lot of people say like, you know, my Amazon link is in the description below. And every time you click on that, if you buy something within like a day or something of clicking that, they get sometimes, depending on what they buy, they get a small percentage of the sales 5%. Price.
4-5%.
Yeah. And then other companies like outdoor retailers and even product manufacturers have their own affiliate programs too. So as a social media person or as a as a YouTuber, you can, like, if you do review of the Jackery and you're in the Jackery affiliate program, there's a link in your description. That's just another way in which you can get 5% from that sale or whatever it might be. Right. And so just for people who are out there, that's what we mean when we say like these affiliate revenue streams. It's super common. Almost every YouTube person that makes videos for a living has an affiliate revenue set up with at least Amazon. Yeah,
you have to. You just have to.
So people are watching your videos. They're clicking on your links. You're starting to see a little bit of money come in now on the affiliate side of things.
Yeah. And so in 2021, we started the year with 5,000 subscribers. And I have a full-time job, but working from home. So, I'm able to double up and go make a video in the garage and, edit while I'm, also talking to customers and that sort of thing.
Yep.
And the whole time thinking I've got, at this point, 3 years to grow this to be something sustainable. And had no idea. We did our trip, which this year was this high watermark video, but last year we call it the cold water run because it's always end of January, 1st of February when we do this trip. So it's cold.
Yeah.
And that cold water run video last year, it was my first hour long video. Like, that was the longest video I'd ever made. And I was tired of cutting trips up into like part one, part two, because those always flopped. Yep. So I thought, I'm just gonna make this trip is going to be one video, and it ended up being an hour long. And that video went completely bonkers. I mean, to this day, it's in my top three videos viewed.
And YouTube is so weird. And it's an algorithm. You don't really
you can't really predict it. And I tried to duplicate it and I haven't been able to. But just for whatever reason, and right now that video's got, almost a year later, over 500,000 views.
That's crazy. I feel like every full-time YouTuber has something like that takes after a while. Like, they make one and it gets on the track to 1 million views, and that's kind of... Yeah.
I mean, if I could predict and repeat what happened with that video and why YouTube shared it like crazy, we would.
Yeah.
But, so that happened in the spring, or late winter, early spring. And I was like, whoa, if this could be sustainable, it could happen sooner than later.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kept growing and it just kept growing. Yeah, the affiliate piece
has 572,000.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
The affiliate piece kept growing. We launched our Patreon,
which was a huge struggle.
Yeah. We launched our Patreon beginning of 2021.
Wait. What was a huge struggle? Launching the Patreon was a huge struggle.
Yeah,
Patreon for us was launching. Yeah, that was a huge struggle for us personally, because it's one thing for us to make an income with a company like YouTube or something like that, but to ask people to contribute to us, that's a lot more personal. And so we felt, I don't know, it's kind of been very humbling to us.
Yeah, for people to contribute to us felt weird. Mm. But, you see, the big names, Lifestyle Overland, mm-hmm. Their Patreon, that's their foundation for their stuff. You got guys like, Chris Shantz with Venture Forward.
Yep.
He's, his Patreon base is his backbone.
Revere Overland, even Trail Recon had Patreon for a while.
Before one thing that me and Matt, we actually had spoken. One of our friends is a Patreon of Lifestyle Overlands, and they get calls with them, and they had discussed that at one point, and the Lifestyle Overland crew said something to the fact of the inconsistency of YouTube and the finances that you can bring in from that. Patreon is a consistent people supporting you.
Yeah.
And that's what we really need to be able to do this full time. Like, if it wasn't for those people, we couldn't guarantee the YouTube stats.
So I want to talk about this for a second as not as part of your story. It definitely is part of your story, but the concept of Patreon, there is a value trade. So if people who are your Patreons are paying. They're basically, they want your content to exist in the world, mm-hmm. and they want it to be good, and they want it to be consistent. They're paying. It's like a subscription to a to entertainment mm-hmm. channel, an education right. channel. So they're paying because they want you to make those videos, and they want those videos to get better and better and better, and they enjoy it, and they like being like it. Mm-hmm. It feels good to them. To essentially kind of like, it's like when you invest in a brewery or something, you kind of right. feel like you have some ownership in it. How, cause you said it was kind of a struggle for you to ask.
Yeah.
And so like, how have you adapted to that, or, you know, made peace with the fact that people are, they're paying you, mm-hmm. they're paying your salary in some extent.
Yeah. I mean, and that was the weird thing was, you know, they're not buying any tangible product from us. They're essentially just, we appreciate your content and we want to help support you mm-hmm. to do that. Mm-hmm. And that's what, you know, Kara said, it was just really humbling, you know, because of that conversation with Lifestyle Overland and, you know, them talking about just how hard it is, you know, with that YouTube algorithm, you can't always guarantee that you're going to have X amount of income each month.
Right.
And so that Patreon was their base. And everything from YouTube is above and beyond that. We knew, okay, if we're going to make this, if this is going to be a full lifetime thing for a full-time thing for us and live on the road, we need to have that base. And so mm-hmm. we launched it. And my thought was, you know, if we could get to, you know, 50 patrons by the end of the year, that would just blow my mind. And I mean, we far exceeded that. It just blew my mind, and it was so humbling how many people were like, your channel has helped me so much mm-hmm. in product reviews, or, you know, my tutorials and stuff that I do, yeah. or just inspiration to get out and explore places. Like your channel has been so inspirational to me to do this thing we call overlanding that I want to support you.
Yeah.
And that was just crazy to me.
And I will say, I've had, even at whenever we were at Big Iron last year, we had a couple come up to us and he personally thanked me because his wife had never wanted to experience any of this. And because of a video I made about a toilet, like his wife is going with them because they purchased that for her and they're having the best marriage and experiencing all this together. So that was just super encouraging.
Yeah. I have set up a Patreon account, but I haven't been brave enough to turn it on. I'm not sure I'm ready for
it. We would support you.
I'm like you guys and like one that's like, you know,
hey,
10
it
bucks
a starts month. With one, Will. It starts with one.
I totally agree. But there is like the reason I bring that up is because like I'm not ready for that responsibility yet. Like I feel like
there's
this relationship that forms that's way different than your subscribers mm-hmm. with us. So like, what's that been like for you? Like, do you feel like you have like a different relationship with your patrons?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, cause they have different access to us than, you know, just a regular YouTube subscriber does. You know, some of them have my cell phone number and, you know,
so they can all crazy.
They can all reach out to us through, you know, Patreon has a messaging feature in it. So
and Will, you have access to that and you don't even have to be our patron.
Yes.
The Patreon thing has been a little bit more of a struggle because I'm used to Matt, you know, getting all the awareness and the guy with the blue hair, you know, and I can walk around without an OA shirt on. Well, I can't anymore because people recognize me. And so I've had at an event last year, I won't say which event, someone came up to me and shook my hand and introduced himself. And I was like, I may not remember your name. You know, I'm really sorry. And they said, well, you should because I'm a patron. And I'm like, oh, I like that ruined my whole weekend for that.
Yeah, that event felt so bad.
I do. I take that personally. And so like,
and there's some people that do it because they want to have a connection with you.
Yeah.
And you know, there's some that I'll chat with through, you know, the messaging system on Patreon. I'll chat with them maybe every other day.
Yeah.
At least for sure once a week.
We love that.
And they're just like, hey, you know, what's up? Or, hey, I have, you know, mm-hmm. hey, you know, just, you know, just all talking about anything. And then there's some that just, they like what we do. They don't, that all they want to do is, you know, go, you know what? I want to support Ozark Overland Adventures with $10 a month. And I've never heard from them.
Or we have, sometimes we have people that pay, jump on, get our routes,
And then bail.
You know, that, that's so I want to talk about that in just a second, about the whole like public, like route publishing thing. But my last question on the Patreon thing, because it's fascinating to me, and I think it's fascinating to a lot of people, like, how does this work? Why do people do this? Does it feel weird to you that it could be interpreted that you're basically like, people are paying to be your friends?
It's like a fraternity or sorority in that aspect.
It's like, I guess what I'm getting at is like, you're popular. Like, you're popular enough that people want to pay to support you and have access to text you.
Yeah.
That seems like a head trip to me.
But I've honestly never thought of it like that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Oh, thanks for ruining it, Will. Good job.
Ozark Overland Adventures exists no more.
No. I mean, they wouldn't do it if they didn't want to. Like, that's the reality. They're doing it because they want
to. I don't like to think that I'm popular. I like to think that people appreciate the things that we appreciate.
Yeah.
I think that we are all like-minded and they support that. But I don't like the idea. I think the term popular, I don't know if I just grew up more in a smaller town where the popular people were rude and hateful. We don't ever want to attach that stigma.
Yeah, I didn't mean it like that, but I understand totally. No. Yeah.
I want people to be supportive and of everybody.
Mm-hmm. I mean, anytime you're going to venture and do something that's like YouTube, where you're creating content for people to watch, people are going to recognize you. They're going to, you know, see you at the trade shows and want to meet you and that sort of stuff. And
we love
it's
that.
Weird. Yeah. I mean, it's weird, but it's, we love it because we love meeting the people. Yeah, it's very encouraging.
Yeah.
But we don't, you know, but I mean, my friends will laugh and, the ones that are in my videos all the time, you know, my friends will go, you know, talk about the celebrity status. And that's just weird. I'm like, dude, I'm just a dude making videos in my garage. Yeah. You know,
we have a friend right now he's trying to sell something off of his rig. And so he's like, you can see it being used in this video. And the guy thought he was the guy. He's like, we've watched your videos all this time.
He's like, whoa, you're not in those videos?
Like, yeah. As a matter of fact, I am.
Exactly.
I'm a little YouTube famous.
So that is where we're going to leave this episode. We're about to change the subject slightly and get into some really fun conversation. So I hope you come back and listen to part two with Matt and Kara McClellan and Ozark Overlanding Adventures. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.